You are listening to Oscar Conversion Therapy Survivor. The Oscar series is aimed at busting myths around queer topics and bringing you the realities faced by people who have actually experienced them. My name is Sheena. My pronouns are she, her. And I am joined today by two amazing guests who are doing a no-holds-barred discussion about conversion therapy and their experiences. Today I'm joined by Elena Joy. Thank you for joining me, Elena.
Thank you so much for having me. I am a speaker and a founder of a nonprofit and a mom of four beautiful kids and, yeah, and a lesbian. And my pronouns are she, her, and I am a conversion therapy survivor, so hence I am enjoying being on your program.
And I'm joined by Ray D. Magden. Ray, thank you for joining me today.
Hello, I'm Ray D. Magden. My pronouns are she, her. I'm an author of 10 books with the label Desert Palm Press. My latest release is Lucky Seven, which is a cyberpunk novel about a whole crew of queer characters taking down evil corporations with virtual heists. And it won a Golden Crown Literary Award and a Rainbow Award. So I'm really happy to be here today.
Fantastic. And today we're talking about hypocrisy, particularly within conversion therapy. Ray, let's start with you.
Yes. One of the big logical fallacies that I could not wrap my mind around then or now is that when I was going to these meetings with my priest at the time, Father Jim, he gave me two different facts that were simultaneously true, in his opinion. And the first thing he said was that being queer was unnatural and heterosexual attraction was the only natural attraction, and the only time it should be acted upon was in marriage. So, you know, pretty typical conservative Christian point of view. But then I also heard from the same person and also from other people in my faith that I discussed this with the idea that, oh, well, you know, you might be gay, and that might not be something you can change, but just because you are gay doesn't mean you should pursue homosexual attractions, which is how they phrased it. Those certainly are not the words I would use. But I found it very strange that multiple people in authority in my church simultaneously were telling me the only natural kind of sexual attraction is heterosexual attraction, and if you try hard enough, and you pray hard enough, and you deal with your psychological issues, you can be straight. But they also, in the next breath, told me, well, maybe you are queer, maybe you're a lesbian, which is how I identified at the time, but that doesn't mean you have to act on it. That doesn't mean you have to get a girlfriend and have sex. And I just, yeah, it was two different statements that didn't go together. And it made me question the wider effectiveness of the stuff I was enduring at the time.
Absolutely. It is amazing the mental gymnastics, like the loops we have to jump through in order to try to resolve that cognitive dissonance. Like, to be told this is a problem and we're going to fix it, that implies that you were once whole, you're now broken, and someone's going to help you become whole again, right? And at the same time saying, this is just a hardship that has been put on you, just like how some people are in wheelchairs, or just like how some people have ADD, right? This is a hardship that has been put on you because that's the experience of being on Earth. There's something that we're supposed to learn from it. There's something that we're supposed to grow and become a better person by denying ourselves this aspect or controlling this aspect of ourselves, right?
That's exactly the line that I heard, that like everyone has their struggles and their temptations, and this is yours. This might just be the natural temptation that you have, the challenge that God gave you to overcome.
Yeah. So are you going to fix me, or am I supposed to have this? Like, because then there's the concept of, okay, all right, if I'm broken, did God make me broken? Like, God doesn't make mistakes. I think we can all agree on that. So did God create a being that has a broken part of them? No, God gave you a hardship that you need to overcome. God loves you so much that he's helping you become this better person by giving you this hardship that you have to overcome. No, I don't, like, I am not an amazing parent by any means, but even I know that I'm not going to put my kid through pain and suffering to help them become a better person.
It's also interesting, I think, in real life and in media, the kinds of people that we expect to make lemonade out of their lemons, the kind of people we expect to grow from their hardships. It seems especially the church often expects women to, in particular, to endure hardships in order to grow spiritually. And, you know, it feeds into the whole anti-choice movement as well, that line of thinking. But it's just, it never made sense to me. And I'm honestly glad it didn't make sense to me when I was being told those two separate things, because that cognitive dissonance was what I clung to when I started doubting myself. Because I was out before I went to conversion therapy. I had already come out at school. I was the only out queer woman at my school, which was even harder. And there were some issues there. I got accused of sexual harassment, which was not fun just for existing. And also, I, you know, some of the freshmen were scared of me. They thought I was going to sexually assault them, I guess, because I was queer. So it was pretty ridiculous. But I was out. And then when I started hearing someone tell me, "You're broken, you're broken, you're broken," well, am I broken, or is this something that was purposely given to me by God so that I could grow? I mean, it's one or the other.
Yeah, you can't have both. One of the more interesting parts of the hypocrisy, I thought, was, and maybe it was because I was never tempted to do this. I don't know that anyone is, maybe people are tempted to try to live a straight life, but being aware of, like, I have this attraction and I'm not going to fulfill it because God doesn't want me to, but I'll hold hands with a person or I'll cuddle with a person. So there's this group, this kind of offshoot of the LDS church that addresses homosexuality. I guess they're considered like a support group. They're not very focused on women. They're like 90% focused on men, which is a topic for later in the conversation. But they have an interesting approach in which they are urging you to maintain a connection, but not give in to breaking the law of chastity. And so they host what they call cuddle parties.
Wow.
So these men, most of which are married to women who, quote unquote, struggle with same-sex attraction, they'll all go to whoever's hosting the party, their house, and literally just sit and lay around on each other to have that, like, physical connection, to not feel like they're completely alone. And then they go home to their wives. So as I'm looking into this further, the more men I talk to about it, they're like, yeah, that's the premise. Really, it's a way to hook up. Like, it's a way to know, okay, there's another man who doesn't want to leave his wife, doesn't want to leave his kids, but yeah, he's interested in quote unquote connection, right? And so then the hookups happen later at the gym or in the parking lot or wherever. But the whole organization, their premise is, let's have a cuddle party so that you can stand your life, so that you can have some kind of connection and still go home to your wife.
And, you know, that's another thing I don't understand. I don't think it would be fair of God to say, I'm going to give you attraction and a sex drive and then completely forbid you from acting on it. Because not for everyone. I mean, there are lots of asexual and aromantic people out there, and they are valid and on the normal spectrum of attraction. But for many of us, sex is a very important part of who we are, and it's an important part of our lives. And to just be denied that completely is to be not denied an important aspect of yourself. And it doesn't seem fair to me that God would say, yeah, this group of people, there's a way ethically for you to act on your attractions. And this group of people, nope, you can't. Just have to deal with it. Sorry. Sorry for your luck.
I am so glad you brought up the topic of asexuality. So something crazy happened. BYU, the church's college that's in Utah, and they're a big football college and a big basketball college and all of that. So sports fans really know about them. And so they have an honor code that you have to sign in order to be a student there or employed there. And so you don't have to be a member, but you do have to sign the honor code. And you have to re-sign it every year. And you are committing to a lot of different things, that you're not going to smoke, you're not going to drink, you're not going to do drugs. Men are required to shave their face. Women are required to not have more than 2 piercings, 1 in each ear. And different things. And one of them is, if you display any homosexual behavior, or if you are found to be in a homosexual relationship, it's in violation of the honor code and you can be kicked out or fired. So last month, this has been in the standing since the beginning of time. Last month, the honor code office tweeted that they were changing the rule and it wasn't going to be based on displays of affection, public displays of affection. It was going to be based on whether you were breaking the law of chastity. So basically, if you didn't have homosexual sex, you were okay. You weren't going to be kicked out of school.
So, like, asexual gay couples could totally, like, sneak in under the radar there.
Uh-huh. So what happened, first of all, thousands of people called the honor code office, and they confirmed, yes, we sent this out. No, we weren't hacked. It is an actual change to the honor code. And then things went nuts. And kids came out all over the place. They were coming out to their roommates. They were coming out to their professors. Professors came out. Like, the whole, and then people started, like, holding hands on campus. And there's pictures of girls kissing in front of the Brigham Young statue. Like, for 48 hours, it went crazy. And then they changed their mind. And they said, that's not what we were talking about. You guys obviously can't handle this. Homosexual relationships are in violation of God's plan because you cannot procreate. And that's God's plan. So because of that, we're taking back this rule. And again, it's in violation of the honor code. So there's 2 points there. One of which, obviously, it's horrific because all of these people came out and now their jobs, their scholarships, their college degrees are on the line. And thousands have had to transfer, and we've been doing fundraising for their fees and stuff, which is awesome. But on the other side of it is people were pointing out, okay, so if I'm not in a heterosexual relationship, like if I'm not actively pursuing procreating, am I in violation of God's plan? What if I'm asexual? Is that in violation of God's plan? And there's no response to that.
What if somebody is heterosexual but infertile?
Yes. Thank you.
See, it all starts to fall apart when you start to pull the threads. It all comes unraveled.
When you apply logic.
And honestly, that's kind of what saved me, because I just could not reconcile so many of the things that I believed with what I was being told. And eventually it got me to a place where I left the church.
Yeah.
Another thing that I just couldn't get over is that, at least in the Orthodox Church, women can't be ministers. And I was always raised to believe in equality of the genders. So why should men be the only leaders in the church? And the answer from Orthodoxy is that women have their own role as stewards of the church. They do a whole bunch of other activities, which is mostly thankless labor. And to see that carried out made me question all the other things I'd been told, including what I was being told about sexuality. This stuff is really harmful. It can mess you up. I think that I still struggle with internalized homophobia and biphobia because of my religious upbringing. And I know that I really treasure depictions of same gender sex in the media I consume, because it's a nice reminder that it's not inherently sinful or dirty. That's why I often include sex scenes in my work, because I want to show that to other people. There's often an emotional element that is very positive and intimate, and it's a good and beautiful thing. That's another thing about Orthodoxy in the home I was raised in specifically, is that they don't think sex is inherently dirty. If it's under certain conditions, sex is a wonderful thing, even for pleasure in Orthodoxy. It doesn't have to just be procreation, but it does have to be heterosexual and in the confines of a marriage. But, you know, sexual pleasure is a good thing, and it's a godly thing, and it just made me question the unfairness of it all. Like, why don't I get to have that good thing?
Thank you for being an awesome listener and supporting Tilt, the channel that brings you all the podcasts you want to hear. You're listening to Tilt. Find more podcasts on thelesbiantalkshow.com.
It is fascinating to see the parallels of a faith transition with a sexuality transition. Like, in sexuality, like, first we have to admit to ourselves, right? We have to admit, oh, yeah, I think I might be gay, or I might be bi, or I might be lesbian, whatever the word is. And in the faith transition, first you have to admit to yourself, oh, I might not actually believe this entire faith framework that's been laid out for me. And then you have to come out to your parents, or to your family, or to your spouse, right? Both in the faith framework and in the sexuality framework. And then you have to go public. Then your community finds out, right, that you've either come out sexually or you've come out of that faith framework. Like, the lexicon is so similar, the experience is so parallel. I find it fascinating. And it's like you said, it's in that logic. Like, once you start to question, okay, I don't actually believe that women are not worthy of holding the priesthood. Okay, well, if I don't actually believe that, then I don't have to believe that it's a sin to be a homosexual. And then the dominoes fall.
I think that's one reason my mother struggled to accept me so much. It's because her faith is a spiritual armor. And Orthodoxy especially is so stringent that if you, as you said, topple one domino, the whole chain falls. If what the church says about same-gender attraction is not true, then what else isn't true? What else could be questioned? What else could be wrong? And if you're trying to believe that something is the infallible word of God, then you question everything. And then she would be at risk of losing one of her main support systems that she uses to get through the difficult parts of her life. And so one of my therapists a couple of years ago said, well, these are all the reasons that your mother should accept you, but she obviously hasn't. So maybe you should start thinking about the reasons why she can't accept you. And that really changed my perspective on it, because I knew that if she did accept me, for her, it would mean rejecting her faith, and she needs that to get through the day. So that actually healed our relationship quite a bit, because then I understood her perspective and I was more understanding. And in turn, she worked very hard to be more understanding and accepting of me. So it was a two-way street. But I would not, just for anyone else listening to this, like, I would not recommend this for every situation. There are some times where your relationship with your family is so deteriorated and harmful to you that it's better to end that relationship. And there is no shame in doing that to protect yourself.
I agree. And navigating that line is such a daily challenge.
It really is.
The phrase that's in Mormonism, I don't know if it's in Orthodoxy, is hate the sin, love the sinner.
I've heard that phrase, not at church so much, but just in general.
In general, right? And so that's very much like the frame of mind that my community has taken is, Okay, well, we hate what Elena is doing, and we hate who she's living with, like the living situation that she's in. But we love Elena. Elena is a very good person. We've known Elena for decades, and she's done all these really great things. So we love you, Elena. We just don't love things that you're doing. And that becomes really hard. I can take that from people that I only talk to, like, I don't know, on Facebook. But taking that from family, from people that I really relied on and that really relied on me, I don't know where that line is. It doesn't feel very emotionally safe for someone to say, I love you, I just don't love what you're doing. But then again, as a mom, I can see that. Like if my kid was into harmful drugs, I could say to him, I love you. I don't love what you're doing right now. I don't love your behavior, but I love you. I'm always going to love you.
But see, that's another false equivalency, though, because drugs cause you physical and mental harm, whereas same-gender attractions and romantic feelings are not inherently harmful unless people are making you feel broken.
Well, and to them, they're saying this is harmful to you because you're not going to get back to God. So this is as harmful to you as drugs are to your son.
But if you pick that apart a little more, it doesn't make sense. None of it makes sense. I see it. It makes sense on the surface. But if you dig a little deeper, then it's like, what are you talking about?
Yes. Yes. I agree. And so it's interesting because the pain of that hypocrisy is greater the closer the person is to me. So, of course, I want that person in my life. My younger brother is a huge Trump supporter.
Oh, no.
Yeah. 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 I mean, he's only 3 years younger than me. He has my only niece. Like, I love my brother, but I also have to really put up a barrier. I can't have a casual conversation with him because he could say something as silly as, I love you, I just don't love what you're doing. And if it was a random person on Facebook, I could care less. But if my brother says that, that will hurt a lot. And so it's almost like I don't even want to give him the opportunity, which is not, it's not healthy or functional in any way, shape, or form. But it is a really hard paradox of, the closer they are to you, the more you want them in your life, but the more they can hurt you.
Why is it your job to try to mend those fences and try to build those bridges and try to get over the thing when they're the ones that are alienating you?
Okay, so I guess I think that's such a valid question. And I think my response to that would be, because I pride myself on being a good person and I don't want to treat them badly because of a false belief that they have, because I held false beliefs for so long. And yet at the same time, where's that line of protecting yourself? I don't know. I have not been able to negotiate that.
I think I might be a little less tolerant than you are.
But not just protecting yourself, but protecting your girlfriend, your wife, your life partner. Because when you come back from that discussion with your brother, your mother, your father, whoever is having this discussion with you, and you are heartbroken, she's feeling that too.
That's so true. That when I'm allowing myself to be hurt, I'm also allowing her to be hurt. And I can see myself being way more protective of her than of myself. That's a very good point. There's a hypocrisy right there.
That's why I was very protective of Tori when he came out as trans. When I told my parents, I let them say some incredibly hurtful things to me when I came out. But when he came out, I put my foot down. And luckily, I only had to say it once. By then, my parents had learned that I would distance myself from them if they didn't follow my rules for basic respect. Fortunately, they did. I know not everyone's parents are good enough to do that, so I'm fortunate in that sense. But, I mean, I basically said, you need to use the name Tori, and you have to use he, him pronouns, and it's just a basic respect thing. And I think that's why my parents don't support Trump, even though they have this very conservative Christian way of viewing the world, because they see the harm his policies do to marginalized communities like the poor and immigrants. And so he is devastating these communities. And my parents are like, well, that's not very Christian. So I am very proud of them for seeing through that.
Yeah, it is really interesting that we have people in our lives who, through their interaction with us, their eyes are often open to, okay, there's some politics that I thought I agreed with that I don't. Unfortunately, I don't often see that then going further into religion, into spirituality. There's a whole group out there called Mama Dragons, and it's this massive group of moms of LGBT kids or adult children. And they are women who were at one time very, very conservative. And now they see that there's a faith framework that causes damage to their children. And now they're very vocal and active in protecting their children from these faith frameworks. And so I guess that in that way that happens. But I have so many people in my life that say, I love you so much, Elena. And my response is, and yet you pay tithing to a church that doesn't want me to exist. I don't know how to resolve that. You go to church every Sunday and support a prophet who supported at one time electroshock therapy. I don't know how to resolve that. And yet, do I want to discriminate them just because they are living their chosen spiritual life? Well, no, except it kind of hurts.
What do they say when you say that to them?
I've never had the guts to say that to someone to their face. I have when it's been a mom whose child has just come out to her. And so she's come to me saying, how do I support them? How do I love them? And I have said, well, you need to realize that they're watching you go to church every Sunday. And they're watching you fill out that tithing check. And that's communicating something to them. But that's for you to resolve. But just be aware that they are observing that.
Yeah, I have taken a more nuclear option, which is that I don't communicate with anyone except for one grandmother who supports Trump or any kind of anti-LGBT legislation in my life. I don't have those people in my life. But I do acknowledge that there is space for people to grow. And that it doesn't necessarily mean you're a horrible person if you have these ill-informed beliefs. I mean, people are a result of their environment. And if there aren't people like you, Elena, who are willing to straddle those worlds and show them a different way of thinking, like, it's never going to change.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I am currently thinking. But I will tell you that my therapist has a much more similar response to you. Her response was, hate is contagious. And like, for example, in politics, we have someone really spreading hate in politics. And so if you don't want to be involved in that hate, even though you might agree with maybe some of his economic policies.
I mean, how could you even do that? Because that is also harming marginalized communities.
Right. And so her point was like, because hate is so contagious, you have to remove yourself from it and protect your environment from it. So to her, she's very much supportive of me just cutting off all ties to anyone that has anything to do with Mormonism at all. But here's the crutch of it, or the bitch of it, depending on how you want to look at it. I have 4 Mormon children who go to church, not during quarantine, but normally they go to Mormon church every Sunday. So I can't cut off all ties. And they get to deal with trying to resolve those different concepts, that cognitive dissonance.
I don't think there is a single solution. I think it's dependent on the individuals involved at whatever point. Elena, I will say this, though. I applaud you. You yourself are quite early in your own coming out journey, and yet you are standing up and saying, these are bridges we need to build. These are things we need to look at. It's brave. It's incredible.
It's crazy. And I tell you what, hearing stories like Ray's, like, I mean, you don't know. Like, for every ex-Mormon woman that will listen to this, to hear that there is another religion just as crazy and whacked out as the Mormons, like, it feels so validating. Like, when I talk to ex-Jehovah Witnesses, it's the same thing. Like, I'm like, oh, y'all are crazy too. It's, like, so crazy. I thought it was just the Mormons, but it's not. There's a lot of crazy religions.
And it's kind of hard because in my heart, I do still have a lot of affection for Orthodoxy. And I think it can be, in many ways, a good framework on which to build your life. And it has a lot of good messages that I still use today to bring comfort when I'm upset about my life or the state of the world. So I've only recently been trying to find a new way to practice my spirituality and to find that fulfillment. I know not everyone needs a spirituality, but I have that thirst. And so I have been attending virtually an Episcopalian church with two of my queer friends, and we've made a queer Bible study group. And it's been very interesting because never before in a Bible study group have I been able to, like, point out the misogyny that I see in the text or ask questions about why. Like, we were doing Genesis the other day and I asked one of my friends, so, like, why is Abraham cool with basically pimping his wife out to Pharaoh? And, like, I couldn't have said that in the regular Bible study group, but those kind of questions in a queer Bible study group are, like, welcome. And one of my friends was able to explain the historical context, because she came from a crazy religious background where they had to study the Bible in school at their private school, like, every day for all 4 years of high school. So this stuff takes a long time to untangle. If you're a queer person coming from this kind of environment with all these different cognitive dissonances and all these different conflicting messages, be really patient with yourself and be really kind to yourself. It takes so much time and effort, and you can't just skip over it. Even if logically you can see where the flaw in the thinking is, and logically you come to the conclusion that being queer is not immoral and it doesn't mean you're broken, those thoughts, those patterns have still been instilled in you for a long time if you're coming from that kind of environment. And you have to be really patient with yourself as you practice these new ways of thinking. You have to retrain your brain. I'm still retraining my brain. I still have some internalized homophobia and biphobia to deal with. And it's hard. So find a supportive friend group. Talk to other queer people who have been through similar things or who are just positive and can show you what it is like to have a positive relationship with your queerness. But it's not going to happen overnight. It's a long process. So don't beat yourself up for not immediately being able to throw out all of the bad stuff you've been taught.
And I think the only thing I could even think to add to that is that one of the best ways of working through it is to get involved in a group where you can see how far you've come and where you're going. So when there's, like, brand new people that have come out, or brand new people who have realized, I am queer and I do want to have a spiritual life, or whatever that is, if there are a few steps behind you, it really helps you to work out, okay, I have progressed, I have grown, I've been able to release things, and oh, I can see her dealing with something that, yeah, I probably should deal with that too. When there's someone on the path in front of you, not only do you have a destination to point to, but oftentimes, whether it's in your sexuality coming out or in your faith transition coming out, when you start to realize how much damage was really done, you can get really angry. And we all know those angry gays. And I know a lot of angry ex-Mormons, and they can churn there and get stuck there and not progress. And so when you do get involved in a community, you can see, okay, those are the angry ones. And yes, be angry for a time. Like, anger is very useful, but you can see what it's like observing them to be stuck in the anger, and that's not productive. So I'm going to make an active choice to work through my anger and keep going down the path, right?
It's a real tightrope. I've dealt with that too. It's a balancing act between having your anger so that you can heal, but wallowing in your anger so that then you start taking it out on people who aren't even responsible for your pain. People who might be well-meaning and want to be allies, but maybe don't know the terminology yet because they didn't come from an environment where it was taught. So it's really hard, and it's emotionally exhausting to walk that tightrope, and it's not fair that the burden is on us to do that, but it's necessary if you want to live your life with any kind of happiness and kindness. So it's just something you got to do.
Where would you find these groups?
Well, my nerdy answer is going to be that the positive queer communities I've found have been through fandom on social media sites such as Tumblr and Twitter and other sites that celebrate media like TV shows and books. And if you don't know what fan fiction is, you should go read some. But yeah, there are these robust fandom communities where people come together to celebrate one thing, which may be their favorite TV show, can come together to celebrate something more, like their queerness and the sense of community. So that's where I met the people in my circle that helped me through a lot of this. But I know that kind of community won't work for everyone, so I'm interested to see what Elena says.
So I found mine through Facebook. The ex-Mormon group that's local here, there's quite a few that are open to people. Like you can find them easily. You can Google and find them easily. But know that there's also groups that are kind of confidential. I don't want to say secret, but the group that I'm a part of is, because we allow women in from across the faith spectrum. And so some of them are still very active in the church. They're just having some questions. And like you said, a typical Bible study group is not going to invite those questions, right? And so this is a community where they can go to, where their who they are is kept confidential, and they can ask those questions and people can just support them. And then if they choose to stay active in the church, great. And if they choose to not be active in the church, that's great too. So that kind of group is what was most beneficial for me. Interestingly, it's also the hardest to find because it's kept pretty confidential, so that family who don't know you're out of the church or don't know that you're out sexually, they don't find out, right? So you might have to be open to being guided and inspired on who to talk to and who to be open to and making those connections.
Well, that's another cool thing about fandom is that it's by and large anonymous.
Right.
You don't share your real name. In fact, that's like fandom 101 is don't share your real name. Don't talk about your real life in an identifying way. Like you can share details of your life, but don't identify yourself. You're not going to be giving anyone your address or anything. So I think honestly, those kind of communities that are somewhat anonymous are so useful for queer people. And I actually have a friend, my best friend who I used to room with, her name is Brianna Dim. That is her real name. She is getting her PhD in various information sciences that have to do with, basically she studies how technology can be used by marginalized communities for better and worse. And so it's a really cool program that she's doing for her PhD. But one of the things she studied is how certain platforms such as Facebook, for example, both help and harm the queer community in their design structures. So Facebook, where it wants you and encourages you to use your real name and such, that is not always the ideal place for queer people to gather because that identifying information could prove dangerous. So a lot of the communities that queer people go to for this kind of support to work through this stuff are partially anonymous. Facebook usually signals in their research the end of someone's coming out journey. When you post it on Facebook, then that usually means you're out in almost every aspect of your life.
Wow. So what are a few of the steps that lead up to that? is it Instagram first or is it Reddit first? Or, you know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, I mean, Reddit is by and large anonymous. So someone could post in a Reddit thread, like, I'm having these questions, and get feedback potentially from other people who've had similar experiences without having it connected to their real name, to their family members. So, yeah.
Wow. What a fascinating topic for a dissertation. That's so cool.
Yeah, her advisor is Casey Fiesler at Colorado Boulder. So they do a lot of really cool studies on how marginalized communities, mostly queer people, but not just queer people, they do several different studies, how they interact with social media and how social media both helps and harms them, sometimes without even realizing that their designs have these impacts. But we're getting a little bit off topic. But yeah, the internet is a wonderful tool for you to find people to work through this stuff with, to work through these cognitive dissonances that you find. And often the places where you're going to find most of this support are places that are more anonymous.
Elena, where can people find you online if they want to connect with you?
Oh, great. So it's funny because I'm kind of in a transition point. If you want to really connect, I am most open on Instagram under Elena Joy Experience. If you want to connect to me about public speaking, which no one's doing public speaking right now, thank you, Corona. My website right now is elenajoyexperience.com. But I am just this week launching the Pride and Joy Foundation. So you can go to prideandjoyfoundation.com. There's a preview page and a way for you to get in on the ground floor being a founding member. And then that'll have a soft launch in May and then a hard launch in June for Pride Month. So I'm super excited about supporting those families.
Fantastic. Thank you. Ray, where can people find you online?
Well, I'm easy because my name is Rady Magden everywhere. Facebook, my page is Rady Magden, RAEDMAGDON. Same on Twitter, at Rady Magden. Tumblr, Rady Magden. Website, http://radymagden.com. So, yeah, but I'm everywhere.
You have been listening to Ask a Conversion Therapy Survivor. The Ask a series is aimed at busting myths around queer topics and bringing you the realities faced by people who have actually experienced them. My name is Sheena, my pronouns are she, her, and I was joined today by two amazing guests, Elena and Ray. You can find their contact details in the show notes, should you wish to reach out to them. That's all for this episode.